Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers, because everything they do starts with you.
The grain markets recovered dramatically this week as Japan's economy and trouble came into better view. We'll ask what happens next today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Bill Fordham from C&S Grain Market Consulting. He's in Ohio, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today include Greg Johnson of the Andersons from Champaign, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers, because everything they do starts with you.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. Did the strong end of the week close fix the technical problems in most of the commodity charts you watch? We'll start with Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
Well, I think the strong close certainly helped. On a weekly basis, all three commodities, corn, beans, and wheat, did finish higher on a weekly basis. Depending on whether you're looking at 50-day, 100-day, or 200-day moving averages, there's some question about as to whether the charts finished on a friendly note or not. But certainly it's better than what it could have been. And I think there's enough uncertainty out there in the marketplace that I don't think that the failure of any one particular chart sign is overwhelmingly bearish at this point.
Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
I think the outside markets and the fundamentals had more to do with everything this week than anything else, plus the rumors, like the rumor that China had maybe bought some corn. So I don't know that the charts themselves will tell us to buy or sell at all next week.
Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
This week's market reminded me of a quote by Winston Churchill, Todd. He said, "If you're going through hell, keep going." And that seemed like the beginning of the week looked like Armageddon. The end of the week looked a lot better. So thank goodness for the end of the week. I think it was a mixed close. The commodity index charts, especially the agriculture and grain commodity index charts, showed mix on the weekly. Corn was able to get back up above its trend line on its weekly chart, but wheat and beans remain below their old support, uptrending support line, and I think that's indicative of what Pete was talking about with the fundamentals. It sure seemed like that corn received most of the benefit of the fundamental news this week, except for maybe the Informa numbers.
Pete, let's come back to those fundamentals. What were they in the marketplace that lifted it at the end of the week?
Rumors that China had bought grain, corn. Talk about South American crop being maybe even unacceptable, but not as good as expected. And just worries in general about all the outside markets. What are those going to do to whatever we've got as far as demand on fundamentals?
Do you have any more factual figures on what was coming out of South America? This is one that I had not heard yet.
No factuals, just that there were rumors that the rain had caused so much damage that there were places where they might be rejecting beans in Brazil.
And, Greg, can you talk a little bit about the fundamentals this week in the local area and what has happened with cash basis for both corn and soybean?
Well, we saw a slight drop in basis about 2 to 3 weeks ago in both corn and beans, and that was just a direct result of farmer movement. Once we got above $7 on corn and $14 on beans, the farmers really just became flat-price sellers, didn't worry about the carry, didn't worry about the spreads. And so that farmer movement really resulted in a lowering of the basis nearby. What we saw in the last 3 days of this week with the big sell-off early in the week was farmer movement really slowed up to almost next to nothing, and basis levels didn't really respond immediately. But Friday, when the no more bad news came out of Japan, That combined with the rumors of China possibly buying corn, basis levels really started to appear to be firming up, although I think Friday was a day where a lot of the guys were, you know, basis didn't really respond. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer to respond, but the few basis bids that we did see were definitely better. So basis levels, I think, are starting to get better.
Now, did the phone start to ring there at the Andersons at the end of the day, and were producers willing sellers again of grain and oil seeds, whether that be old or new crop?
Yeah, I think we did scare a few people into letting loose of a little bit more old crop corn and beans, very little new crop beans, and maybe just minimal new crop corn. We did get back over $6 again on the December contract, so that did bring a little bit of selling out, but I would say that it was more old crop than new crop.
Pete, did you get a chance to take a look at the Informa numbers as they were released on Friday? The number for soybeans was awfully low.
Yeah, that was kind of surprising at 75.3. And the corn acres, I guess Informa was expected to come out with a huge corn number, but 91.8 was only 0.2 under the USDA. But that bean number was very low, and I think industry, I think, thought Informa would have big numbers on both.
And do you think that those will be dismissed now that we're through Friday and into the weekend? Will they show back up again anytime soon, or will eyes turn forward to the prospective plantings report on the 31st of March?
I think we'll turn towards the new plantings report. I don't know if Informa knows any more than anybody else, but I think in general people think that more bean acres are going to be hard to get if we plant 3 to 4 million more corn and more wheat and more cotton. So I think the Informa number maybe got people's attention that, hey, maybe that 78 million is too many for corn, for beans from USDA.
What was your assessment of that number, Mike?
Yeah, I think your question's real pertinent. I don't think those Informa bean numbers are going to hold up too well if the 6 to 10 day weather forecast holds for really low temperatures from Des Moines to Columbus, Ohio, Todd, and also for the 30-day outlook by NOAA this past week saying that we're going to stay hot and dry in the southern plains, really cold in the western corn belt and really wet in the Midwest and Ohio River Valley. I think the trade's going to have to come back and revisit the potential for corn not getting started in terms of planting on time. I think that's probably the biggest thing we'll go back and look at next week after Friday's big move up.
Well, speaking of planting, heard anybody in the south that really has thought about putting a planter in the ground yet?
The guys I've talked to in Kentucky and Tennessee want to start next week. I've even got a client in Nebraska that is wanting to get started late next week, and I'm trying to pull him off that based upon the fact that his highs may be only 25 degrees on the 24th and 25th. If they don't warm up very quickly, I don't think that'd be a very good idea from my standpoint.
Back to you, Greg. Has demand for both corn and soybeans and origination here in our part of the world been fairly strong over the last week?
Yes, I would say that you know, there's been a tendency for guys to look back at historical basis levels, and then they've seen this big glut of movement in the first 3 months of the year, and they have a tendency to think that you know, we can go with historicals. But I think if you look at you know, talking to different producers that typically hold on to corn and capture the carry in the market into the summer, these flat prices are overwhelming that small carry in the market. So I've been telling people, end users, ethanol guys, livestock feeders, you know, when the farmers are moving corn here in Feb, March, April, you need to buy it, because come July, August, it's going to be tough to find old crop corn, I believe.
Did the end users do a lot of sourcing on the break?
Yes. It's you know, I think they're scared, and rightly so, you know, about how high this could go if either A, we don't get the acres, the 92.5 million acres, or B, if we have some kind of a weather problem along the way. So, you know, nobody knows for sure, but I think that they feel like there's more risk to the upside than the downside, you know, throughout the whole, given the whole, you know, planting season is still ahead of us.
Hey, Mike, why don't you follow up on what Greg just had to say about the marketplace, please?
It doesn't surprise me. I think the other thing, Todd, we got to go back to is that with today's genetics, I feel pretty strongly. I think everybody on this line would, and on this program would agree that if you don't get early and timely corn planting, your maximum yield potential is also going to be clipped or potentially be clipped as well. So the early planting takes an extra special, an extra big role in the market this year, and I think that's why the end users are in that mindset. And I think that probably globally the end users are still wondering and questioning what the fallout and the demand side from Japan's going to be and how quickly they're going to be able to take on feed grains. After the Kobe 1995 earthquake in Japan, freight transportation took 3 months to get back up to its pre-crisis or pre-earthquake levels. I'm guessing this could take as long as 6 or more months based upon what I'm hearing over there.
You know, Mike, you make a good point there about transportation in Japan. I'm wondering if you can compare what's happening there now to Katrina in the U.S. Of course, a tsunami and a hurricane are a little different. They have a hurricane and they have an earthquake on top of that. But the first things that really did open up in the United States, and it didn't take but a couple of weeks after Katrina came through, were the ports in New Orleans.
No, you're right. They were both coastal areas. I think the one major difference, and I got this from a person at the North American Office of Agriculture and Livestock Corporation from Japan this past week, who said that the other big issue is that the damaged areas were having a hard time getting feed grain to the livestock producers because of the shortage of fuel. And I think that's an element that I had not thought about, had missed in my initial assessment. And that's one of those elements that probably could stick around for quite some time and disrupt. And he went on further to say that they're going ahead and sending livestock to the meat processor plants at this point because they can no longer feed. So why let them go backwards in their feed gain? Just go ahead and get them into the processor. So I think that's probably the major difference, along with the radiation issue and how substantial that becomes in the future here.
Greg, I want to come back to that domestic usage issue. You said that producers, end users, that is, had come into the marketplace on the break. Do you think ethanol plants did a pretty good job of sourcing corn? And for how long might they have been able to source it forward? I know they're a little scared of what might happen if the weather doesn't cooperate with the spring planting season or the growing season, for that matter.
Yeah, that's right, and yes, ethanol users, food grade users, we saw both step in, livestock feeders as well, and you know, I think that's kind of our recommendation, is to, you know, make sure that you have coverage. I mean, we don't know where the market's going to bottom out at, but it certainly appears that there's still more upside potential than downside potential. I mean, when you look at an overall number, I mean, if everything goes right, you know, we could go down a buck and a half, but if everything goes wrong, we could go up more than a buck and a half. And so I think that's the mindset right now, until we have a much better idea on a number of acres and what kind of start we get off to. So, yes, you know, the end users, I think you know, ethanol guys especially, stepped in and bought corn. I mean, I know they're fearful also of the unknown over in Japan, but, you know, all it took was a rumor of China to remind people that, you know, we have a very limited supply of old crop corn. If we get off to a late start, we may not have new crop corn until sometime in mid-October. And, you know, they really don't want to shut those plants down, you know, too early. So I think it's in their best interest to err on the side of getting a little bit too much coverage early rather than not enough.
Well, you've given us a number for corn, a buck and a half potentially or more on the upside if things get really tight and the weather turns. What about for soybean and for wheat? Do you have an upside potential there too?
Well, I guess personally that I don't think we're going to see, you know, as many acres come out from USDA as what maybe some of the private guys have been saying, you know, seven or maybe vice versa. The government may come out with a big number at 78 million, but I don't see how that can happen unless the weather has something to say about that. So I'm pretty friendly new crop beans. I think that acreage number is going to be friendly at some point in time, you know, and I look for beans to be at least $15 on the November at some point in time. Now they're basically they're 13 and a half, so we're talking another dollar and a half, and that's without weather problems. That's just if the acreage number is 75, 76 million acres.
Mike, you want to take a stab at it and throw wheat into the mix?
Well, and on the beans too, I think Greg's got a good point that, you know, what we noticed here, Todd, in this last week of trade, whether it was going sharply lower on the downside or sharply higher on the upside, everybody moved together. And that goes back to the fund movement and how things are moving in coordinated links. You know, there's a lot of linkage between the markets right now, and the micro fundamentals don't mean a lot when the outside markets and the funds are in control. And Japan did throw a lot of money at the world this week, and the G7 threw even more. So we've got another big round of quantitative easing that could spur some more speculative investment. So I think that 2008, that September 2008 high of that 1490 level on the lead month beans would be an area that I would be looking at if we were able to break higher. As far as the wheat goes, I think the wheat has the best shot to make its high in the next 45 to 60 days. And, you know, as we get into the kind of like 2007, where we went higher into from April 1 essentially into the 1st of June, and then after that it was kind of hard to keep going higher because the harvest was upon us. So I'm thinking maybe another dollar higher in the July wheat is what we can get if the Kansas City July wheat leads us up that high.
How about you, Pete? What do you see for the numbers on the upside potential?
I see higher than Greg's 15 on new crop, but just because I don't know that the acres are going to get there unless we have bad weather for planting. And then on corn, I can see new contract highs all time, which would be up to the $8 mark. On beans, I think you're looking at 16.
You're listening to Commodity Week. Our panelists include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. When we return, we'll talk with Bill Fordham. He's at CNS Grain Market Consulting in Ohio, Illinois.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. This week started out cold and dreary, much the same as the rest of March to date. Conditions began improving on Wednesday, and by Thursday, spring-like warmth was spreading across Illinois. Temperatures were well below normal the early part of this week, and combined with cloudy skies and occasional drizzle, it was generally unpleasant. On Thursday, however, it was a different story. Partly sunny skies and strong southerly winds helped push the temperature into the low and mid-70s across all but the northwestern third of Illinois. There, clouds ahead of an approaching cold front kept temperatures in the low to mid-60s. Precipitation this week was mostly in the southern third of the state, as well as in east-central Illinois. An upper-level system brought up to 9 inches of snow to central Missouri and an inch or so to parts of southern Illinois early in the week, along with some rain. After a cool down this weekend, temperatures will be on the upswing next week. However, look for a chance for scattered showers somewhere in Illinois just about each day. More organized showers and thunderstorms are a better possibility across northern Illinois about midweek. Overall, temperatures next week should average above normal, with some cooling to near normal levels by next weekend. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the March 18th edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio include Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities. He's out of Normal, Illinois. On the phone line from Ohio, Illinois is Bill Fordham. He's with C&S Grain Market Consulting. Thank you for being on the show today, Bill, and for, well, this your first time on our show. You have sent me over the years a lot of your work that has to do with historical trends. The most recent one came this week, Bill, and it was on seasonals. Can you outline it for me?
Thank you for having me, Todd. I was looking at the winter low, the history of the winter lows, and the history of the spring highs. And when the winter lows have come in the month of March, it indicates that probably we should have some rallies up towards the 620 to 640 region in December corn as we approach the spring high sometime in the April, May, June time frame. In terms of November soybeans, we should probably see approach the 1440 area for potential spring high based upon averages.
Well, as I look at that, Bill, you know, the high-end December corn, I think, the recent high anyway, is 619 and a quarter. The high this week was 618. Is that close enough for the spring high for you?
Not necessarily. You hate to see a spring high come 2 days after the winter low. And so I guess I'll hold off, and I don't think so, no.
How about the high and low on beans? What are you looking at? We've come a long way back, but we're still way below the highs. Do you think we'll see those highs shortly here, or do you think we'll go clear out into May before we see highs?
Well, the history of bull markets, when you take a look at 96 and 04 and 08, the history of the bull markets are for the final highs to come in the month of May or June. Occasionally, they will come in April. So I'm expecting the final highs this year to come in the June time frame, to be honest, Pete, for both new crop and old crop.
Bill, when you look at the bull market, I've always wondered, how old is this bull market? And I ask that from the relationship that it seemed like the technicals and a lot of the market participants were looking for some type of correction, even without the Japanese tragedy occurring. And I was just wondering, how old is this bull market we're in right now? Is it an extremely old one compared to the others that we've seen?
I felt that this particular bull market started at the end of June last year. Now, I presume in terms of the larger picture, we've been in a bull market in commodities since the 2000 lows. But I think more specifically, this particular bull market started at the end of June last year.
Hey, Bill, I was wondering, it seems like with all the influx of speculative funds, index funds, hedge funds over the past, let's say, 4 or 5 years, how similar are the correlations to previous years? How confident are you that the correlations, those seasonals, for example, would pan out, given that maybe some of the market makeup is quite a bit different than it was in the past?
I told someone this morning that the only thing that we really have to hang our hat on is history. And history can be very comforting. For example, the winter low so far in December corn and November beans have just about been average when the winter highs came in February. And so even though the declines appear to be severe, they're really not any more than average. Now, in terms of the lead option corn, we had a similar type of decline in 2008. We went down 15% in 7 days in March of 2008. We've gone down 18% this year in 8 days. The high is in 1973, which is probably the only other volatile year like similar to now. It took 9 days for 22% correction in the option corn, but that, of course, didn't come until after the June highs, early June highs in the beans. In lead option beans, in 2008, we had a 29% correction in 20 days. This year, we had a 11% correction in 7 days. In 1973, we had a 26% correction in 2 days. So we have had some prior extreme volatility, and for those of us old enough to have lived through 70, 73 time frame, it's deja vu.
Well, you suggested that what the setback has been average. You gave us that number, I think, for soybeans. That was about 11%. What's an average setback for corn?
In terms of the winter low is normally about 90% of the winter high. So a 10% correction in December corn is average. And November beans is the same. It's about a 10 or 11% correction.
And then your expectation, I suppose, is that by the time we get to June, we'll have a high. Do you have some numbers in mind that will, and maybe they're in percentages, that we'll gain from now until that high comes? And then it sounds to me like that drop-off in the 70s was about 20% for soybeans. I don't know whether it was that much for corn or not.
The 70s drop-off was 22% in corn, in lead option corn. I am doing some annual projections, and my annual projections for December corn was a window between 630 and 760. And my annual projection for November soybeans was from 1370 to 1680. So we've been in the window for November soybeans at 1401, but we've not quite reached that window so far in December corn. But based upon comparing the U.S. stocks of corn relative to world stocks, we're the lowest we've ever been since USDA has been providing separate data for world corn stocks. And if you line up the highs on the 88 highs, the 96 highs, and the 08 highs on lead option corn, that's a perfect trend line that crosses between 820 and 840 this year in in June or July, and I think that's where we're going on late option corn.
Pete here, do you think we have seen then the lows here after the last couple of days of turnaround?
Well, it all depends on the weather and how many acres we get planted and what USDA does with carryout. It's possible to get back to a billion bushels carryout if we have enough acres planted or if we have a reduction in feed use. You know, the 2010 crop is very efficient. We're getting excellent rates of gains from people I talk to. And so they may curtail feed usage. They could curtail exports a little bit, though after this week's China purchases, you really doubt that. But they like to massage the numbers, so you never want to say never. But I do think we have obviously printed the winter low, and I wouldn't be surprised unless something devastating happens where we have printed the low for the year. Because I do not expect a good growing season.
Bill, what role does wheat normally play in the seasonal? Does it normally top first or last, or where does it usually fall in between the corn and the beans?
Well, I have not studied wheat extensively, Mike. I know historically, if you take a look at the charts, wheat has a tendency to peak in March or September. I have put together a wheat-corn spread because I was interested in how narrow that spread got. It got down 108.2% on a weekly close a week ago. We're 112.3% tonight. It did bottom in April of 2000 at 108.5%, and again in June 21 of 96 at 105.1%. So we were very low relative to history, and I expect to wheat probably to widen out against corn, but I really do not have not followed wheat that closely, Mike.
Bill, I was wondering what would you look for to signal a top in this market, whenever that might be, later this spring or early summer. I just think back to the cotton market in December and January, and how many times traders said that the high was in. We might be limit down two or three days in a row, which looked very bad on the charts, but yet we kept coming back. And I'm just wondering, with all the volatility and the tight stocks, if we could see, you know, very choppy trade. So in the corn and bean markets this summer, how would you determine where we might find that top in that market this summer?
Greg, if I had that answer 100%, I would be an active trader and I would not be an analyst. But I don't know. But I have been developing my own tools, and one of the tools I'm looking at is comparing the price and the open interest and volume together, and I'm looking for divergence to take place. I've also I have another API tool that is in my tool three that I think most of you gentlemen received last week from Todd. So I'm looking for divergence when we start having higher highs and less lower highs in some of my technical diverging tools. That's what I'll be looking for. But as you say, it's really, really hard to know for certain with this volatility. That's why producers should always be selling on the left side of the mountain, because once we roll over and know for sure, for certain, that we've not just having a correction but are into a new downtrend, we're so far away from the tops that emotionally, psychologically, it's almost impossible to pull the trigger. So that's why you should always reward the market on a scale-up basis, and I don't repeat to the years you've always recommended that.
Bill Fordham is with CNS Grain Market Consulting. He's in Ohio, Illinois. Now for a final word from our panelists in studio, we'll start with you, Greg Johnson.
This is an opportunity with this rally late in the week to clean up on old crop sales, but I think we still want to be very cautious on new crop sales because the stocks are so tight.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Pete Manhart is with Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois.
Volatile is the word. You saw it this week. If you do make K sales and we back up and you want to be in the market because we think it's going higher, its options are a lot safer, and you can stay in the market and not worry about that $1.20 that we lost as we did this week.
And Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana.
Just wanted to echo our guest comments, Todd, about scale-up selling or that left side of the mountain, especially in the context. Next week, we'll probably try and build on this week's past week's gains, but we still have to contend with the Middle East, the European debt crisis, the emerging market inflation, and Japan. So let's not lose sight of all those things.
Thank you to our panelists and our guest on this March 18th edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.